right, welcome to the deep dive. Today we're going to be taking a look at 1 Corinthians 11,
okay,
verses 2 through 16.
Nice.
And we're going to be talking about how men and women should act during public worship.
Yeah.
And we're going to be primarily using a lecture by Dr. Gary Metters to help us navigate this.
Yes.
So our mission today is to see, what are the main issues Paul is raising in this passage?
All right.
What did it mean back then?
Yeah.
What could its significance be for us today?
Absolutely. And one of the things that Dr. Metters points out right from the beginning is this is considered by many to be the most difficult passage in 1 Corinthians to interpret.
Really?
There's ambiguous phrases. There's the historical context that has to be understood. It's a lightning rod passage in the modern gender debate, which tends to, I think, complicate the process of interpreting it.
Yeah.
So he's not kidding when he says this is a difficult passage.
And just to lay out for everyone listening, Dr. Metters really breaks down his approach into three movements. There's the initial reading of the text, then he goes into a historical and cultural reconstruction, and then finally he touches on the gender debate, primarily focused on how this passage has been used in the U.S.
Right.
So for our deep dive today, we're going to be primarily focusing on those first two. So that initial reading of the text and then that historical cultural reconstruction to understand what Paul was really talking about here. And I think it's really important to remember, as Dr. Metters reminds us, Paul isn't just writing this out of nowhere. He's responding to a letter he got from the church in Corinth, which he had mentioned earlier in chapter 7.
Right.
Now, we don't know for sure if they specifically asked about public worship, but it's clearly something Paul felt was important to address with them. Okay, so let's jump right into the text itself, starting with verse 2. Paul says, I praise you for remembering me in everything and for holding to the traditions just as I pass them on to you.
Right.
So this word traditions, it's not just casual habits.
No, it's...
There's some weight behind it.
Yeah, and Dr. Metters points out that traditions, paradoses in Greek, is a technical term for authoritative oral transmission of religious instruction.
Okay.
In both Judaism and the early church.
Okay.
So it's a very formal way of passing along the tradition. It's not just a, you know, just a casual, well, this is how we do it. It's this has been passed down. This is authoritative teaching that needs to be maintained.
And Dr. Metters makes an interesting point about Second Temple Judaism. He actually calls it a literary bridge between the Old Testament and the New Testament.
Yeah.
What does that mean for us when we think about these traditions Paul is talking about?
Well, Second Temple Judaism, which covers the centuries leading up to Jesus and a little bit beyond, was a period of intense literary and religious activity. It was the environment in which the thinking of Jesus and his followers, including Paul, was formed.
Okay.
So the traditions that they had, they're coming out of Second Temple Judaism.
Yeah.
And that helps to explain why Paul isn't starting from scratch.
Right.
But he is operating within the framework of Second Temple Judaism.
So he sees himself as part of this process of passing on this trusted body of teaching, not just making stuff up as he goes.
Yeah. And Dr. Metters stresses, Paul wasn't trying to create a counter tradition.
Mm-hmm.
He was transmitting and enhancing what he understood to be the true tradition.
Gotcha.
So he's not saying, well, forget all the old stuff.
Right.
He's saying, I'm passing this on to you. And these are the additional things that you need to know. And importantly for us, for our purposes, he viewed these traditions, particularly regarding created sex distinctions, as prescriptive.
Okay.
Rather than descriptive.
Okay, so that distinction between prescriptive and descriptive is huge here.
Sure is.
So let's move on to the structure of the passage itself.
Okay.
Verses 3 through 16.
Yeah.
Dr. Metters mentions that scholars have different ways of structuring this passage.
Yeah. He brings up Fee, Fitzmyer, and Garland. And for our listeners, it's important to know that all of these scholars come with their own theological viewpoints on gender roles. And that can affect how they see the flow of Paul's argument here.
Right. And so I found it interesting, Fitzmyer, he sees verse 3 as a programmatic statement.
Yeah.
What makes verse 3 so central to understanding this passage?
Well, it's in verse 3 that Paul brings up the very controversial, potentially controversial, concept of headship.
Mm-hmm.
But I want you to realize that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of woman is man, and the head of Christ is God. So this is where we're introduced to the word head. Kephale in Greek,
okay,
which is the lightning rod word for this passage.
And Dr. Metters also highlights Garland's perspective. And he points out that Garland, who comes from an egalitarian viewpoint, sees Paul's aim here as not establishing this like rigid hierarchy between men and women.
Yeah.
More as ordering women within within cultural sensitivity in public worship.
Yeah.
And that, to me, it seems like a really important angle to consider, you know, what was Paul's intent here?
Exactly. Yeah. And so the idea is Paul's not trying to establish a gender hierarchy for all of society, but rather he's concerned about the propriety of what's going on in public worship.
In this specific cultural context.
In this specific cultural context, right.
Okay.
And then he also brings up that Garland's chiastic structure.
Right.
He puts verse 10, a woman ought to have authority over her head, right in the center of that.
Okay.
So he sees that as kind of the key verse or the key statement that Paul is making.
So you're saying this idea of a woman having some kind of authority related to her head covering.
Yeah.
That's central.
That's central.
To what Paul is saying here.
Right.
Okay, so let's dig in a little deeper to this word head, kephale.
Right.
So Dr. Metters explains that there's two main ways that this word has been understood. What are those?
Okay, the two primary interpretations are one, authority or ruler, and two, source or origin.
Okay.
And the implications are pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
If head means authority or ruler, then that tends to support the hierarchists in the gender debate.
Right.
Whereas if head means source or origin, like as in, you know, woman came from man in the creation account, then it tends to favor the egalitarians.
Gotcha. And then Dr. Metters mentions this connection between the word head and the Trinity debate.
Yeah.
How does that play into how people understand headship between men and women?
Well, some who hold to the view that head means authority or ruler will argue that Christ is subordinate to the Father in the Trinity, and therefore that can be used as an analogy to say that women are subordinate to men.
Oh, I gotcha.
You know, others who hold an egalitarian view will challenge both the analogy and the idea that Christ is actually subordinate to the Father.
Right.
And that opens up a whole other can of worms, so to speak. So Dr. Metters is right to say that this opens up a large, intricate theological
discussion.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to note that Paul uses the word head 10 times in just verses 3 through 10.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's a lot of uses of this one word. So it's clearly something that he wants us to pay attention to.
Yeah.
And Dr. Metters also asks us to think about, is head being used literally in this passage or metaphorically in different places?
Right.
Can you give us some examples of that?
Well, when he says, you know, Christ is the head of every man, obviously that's not a literal physical headship.
Right.
It's a metaphorical way of describing Christ's authority and leadership over men. But when he talks about, you know, praying or prophesying with your head covered or your head uncovered, now he's talking about a literal covering.
Okay.
So that's an important distinction for us to keep in mind as we're reading through this.
Okay. And so that brings us to the word study debate.
Yeah.
On kephale.
Right.
And Dr. Metters explains how scholars on different sides of the gender debate use this approach to support their views.
Yeah, the word study approach essentially just looks at how a word was used in various ancient Greek texts to try to determine the full range of its meaning.
Gotcha.
So scholars who believe that head means authority.
Okay.
They've gathered up all these examples from ancient literature where head is used to mean authority.
Okay.
And Wayne Grudem is probably the most famous proponent of this view.
Right. But then Dr. Metters also brings up Charlie Troy Martin and his arguments that source was also a legitimate use of kephale.
Right. Yeah. And what's interesting is Martin challenged the idea that source wasn't a legitimate meaning. And he brings up some examples, even dealing with parts of the human body.
Oh, wow.
Where a head was used to describe the source of blood, phlegm, even moisture.
Wow.
And so he makes, I think, a pretty good case that source was also a legitimate meaning for kephale. Now, Dr. Metters does emphasize that just because source appears, you know, however many times
right.
in other literature
yeah.
doesn't necessarily mean that that's what Paul meant here in 1 Corinthians 11.
Yeah.
We still have to look at the context.
Right. Context is king, I guess, when it comes to interpreting these ancient texts.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's move on to the symbolism of covering and uncovering in verses 4 through 6.
Right.
And this is where we really see the visual aspect of what Paul's getting at.
Yes.
So Paul's instruction for men to pray or prophesy with their heads uncovered, that seems to me a little strange when I think about some of the practices in the Old Testament or even Jewish customs, you know, wearing a yarmulke when you pray.
Right.
Why the difference?
Well, and that's where the historical cultural background becomes so important for our listeners to understand. Richard Oster, for example, points out that in Roman culture, especially among prominent men, they covered their heads with a fold of their toga during acts of worship as a way of honoring the deities.
Okay.
And of course, Corinth was a Roman colony.
Right.
And so they would have been very familiar with that Roman practice.
So it would have looked very pagan, basically.
Yes, it would have smacked of syncretism, we would say.
Okay.
Mixing Christianity with paganism.
Gotcha.
And so Dr. Metters connects this with the idea of man being the glory of God. And so that glory shouldn't be covered in worship.
Gotcha, gotcha. Okay, and so then we see this instruction for women to pray or prophesy with their heads covered. And again, the cultural background here is very important. Roman society, it was very common for married women to wear veils as a sign of modesty and respect.
Yes, and Dr. Metters connects that with the symbolism of woman being the glory of man. And in public worship, the focus shouldn't be on man's glory, but it should be on God.
Right.
And so the veil is there to kind of, I don't know, signify that distinction in a public worship setting.
Yeah. So it wasn't necessarily a symbol of inferiority, but a symbol of, you know, maintaining order.
Right.
And proper decorum in worship.
Exactly.
And Dr. Metters makes a point to mention that, you know, Paul's instruction here authorizes women to pray and prophesy in public worship.
Yeah, that's important.
That's an important point to make because some people try to say this passage is all about silencing women. But he's clearly saying here that women can participate in this way.
Right. They're authorized to pray and prophesy.
Yeah. And then it seems like if a woman were to pray or prophesy with her head uncovered, that would have been very disrespectful to her head. And Paul uses that analogy of having your head shaved, which was a mark of shame in that culture.
And it would have been a violation of social norms. And that's really what Paul's addressing here.
Okay. So we've covered a lot of ground here.
Yes.
But I think it's important to zoom out and ask, what's the key takeaway for us? What do we get from all of this?
Well, and this is really, I think, an important point that Dr. Metters makes.
Yeah.
The central focus of this passage is not the relationship between men and women per se.
Okay.
But how both men and women relate to God in public worship.
Okay.
So it's that vertical relationship that is really primary.
Yeah. So the way that they present themselves in worship, including, you know, this symbolic act of covering or not covering their heads, that's about honoring God.
Yeah.
In the created order.
Yeah.
So to recap, I guess Paul's instructions here regarding head coverings are very rooted in the cultural practices of Corinth in the first century. And they utilize this theological symbolism connected to God's glory and the created order.
Yeah.
And I think for anyone listening, it's important to remember that understanding different meanings of tradition, the different interpretations of what head means and the historical context of Roman worship are all essential for navigating this passage.
And as Dr. Metters also points out, even after all of this, there's still a lot of questions that remain.
Yeah.
We didn't even deal with the specifics of what the covering was or the phrase because of the angels in verse 10.
Right.
So there's still plenty for everyone to think about and ponder.
To research and to study.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I guess for you, our listener, just one final thought. How do our own cultural understandings of gender roles and worship practices today influence how we read and interpret scripture? Dr. Metters' emphasis on protecting and reflecting God's glory in creation offers us a crucial lens to view all of this through as we continue to wrestle with these tough questions and try to figure out what are timeless principles and what were specific to that first century context. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.